eżi semmija ġima oħra u għaldarba oħra jiena li jimgawċi flimkien ma' Emmanuel Buttigieġ għanna il-mistednin tal-ġumatana. Il-mistednin l-lum huwa Maja Paċ Sawsmakat u Julia Zerafa, membri tal-Departiment tal-Underwater Cultural Heritage Unit ta' Heritage Malta, fil-qosor Uċu. Aħna ġewwa Heritage Malta hekk insibuhom. Julia, Maja, grazzi tal-li il-qajtu din l-istedina. Il-lum eżis-semija Maja li hija membru ta' dan il-departiment ħad tkun qed tirrispondi l-mistoqsijiet tagħna bl-Ingliż u Julia wkoll ħad tkun qed titkellem magħna imma bil-Malti. Maja, Julia, grazzi tal-qajtu din l-istedina u nixtieq nibda mill-ewwel mistoqsija. Nibda minnek Julia u mbagħad Maja wara. Għala xtaqt tkun arkeologista?
Jiena l-imħabba li l-wirt kulturali bdiet tagħta żgħira ħafna, għandi ommi hija gwida, allura pereżempju fis-sajf kienet toħol ninżur pereżempju t-tempji, l-katakombi, kienet tieni ħafna informazzjoni dettaljata preski kienet gwida, kellha ħafna u għad għandha ħafna l-qalba l-istorja ta' Malta, ara sa tajt trabbejt bl-imħabba li art walidi. L-università ma kienx hemm dubju li kont se nħolla l-arkeoloġija, infatti qasrajt twila courses oħrajn. Jien fil-verità qabel l-università kont ħallt sports coaching. Mbagħad meta kelli l-età għall-università u l-gradi għall-università sewwa li sa tan easy process xi kultant dħalt arkeoloġija and I don't really look back. Mbagħad maritime, missieri huwa amateur photographer, maritime photographer. Allura jisni abbonajtu mesni l-jum għal imħabba li l-bahar u l-imħabba li l-wirt kulturali.
Ma kellek xasla, Julia,
bil-force. I don't look back, it's an obvious plan.
Yes, yes.
I'm lucky fil-verita.
Maja.
Maja.
So I came into archaeology a bit differently to Julia. I don't have that much of a background. I in fact started studying political science first at university where I had some history and archaeology optionals. I then volunteered at an archaeological excavation because a friend of mine was participating and she told me, like, listen, you might have fun, you might enjoy it. So I went for 2 weeks and not even a couple of months later, I dropped out of my course, International Relations. I was already 2 years into it and I started from the beginning archaeology. The maritime element I also came into a bit backwards. There wasn't the option to study maritime archaeology at that time when I was at uni. And then when the post opened, or when the Underwater Cultural Heritage Unit was created at Heritage Malta, I applied for the post, basically, and then ended up getting the position, and here we are 5 years later.
Huh. And here we are.
Mm. Now, I was going to say, it's wonderful, because we have two young people in front of us with such passion.
Yes.
And I think they are wonderful ambassadors for how much studying the humanities, broadly understood, is so important. It's satisfying for you and you're also contributing a lot to the country effectively through this very important pioneering work in relation to maritime archaeology. Now, you're both really young, but you've already done so much. I think it would be interesting for our listeners to know a little bit of, you know, what happened after you graduated then. How did you find yourselves in these roles? Some favorite things, perhaps?
Archaeology undergrad level, you have a lot of thought units, and I was not aware that you can combine archaeology with traditional boats, which is my absolute passion in life. And that is until the final year, where I had bought my own boat, basically, and I started working on it. And what I was doing, essentially, is nautical archaeology. Experimental nautical archaeology. It is a classic sailboat. No one in Malta knew how to rig it. It is completely, with ropes, traditional rigging. It's a balanced lock sail, which is not common. And there you have it. I was combining the archaeological methodology to a nautical project.
Julia is a true lady of the sea.
I'm listening, absolutely fascinated to her. Yes. Where did this love for boats come from then? From father, maybe?
My dad, maritime photography, particular love for sailing. I learned sailing at a somewhat young age, 11, 12.
Okay.
Bermudan rig, so it's the modern rig that you see nowadays, the triangle sail, basically.
Uh-huh.
I'm also a scout, so I really love making things work, knots, rope work, you name it. There you have it, it's a whole cycle that forced me basically, okay, very willingly to
love boats. You had no other option.
I really don't.
Fascinating.
Maya, how about you?
So when I started studying archaeology, the sphere of the maritime wasn't really there yet in my, you know, ambitions for the future. Although I've always had a love for the sea, I love the beach, I love swimming, at that point I loved snorkeling. And as Julia was mentioning, a lot of the focus in the undergrad is on terrestrial archaeology. The excavation, the practical experience that we get is on land. And when it comes to the maritime, I think at that point there were only one or two study units that you could take. But I was already immediately fascinated with this underwater element. And when the underwater cultural heritage unit was set up and I initially joined, I was given the option, you know, do you want to dive, yes or no? I immediately jumped at it. Yes, I do want to dive. And
jumped into it,
exactly, or underwater. And to me, that was a massive turning point, taking that first breath underwater and the experience of an entire different world opening up to you with all the potential that it has was, to me, world-changing at that point.
And you just said that, this whole potential. And this potential, I'm very proud to call you colleagues. And this potential underwater.
Younger colleague.
Yes. No, I'm a much older colleague. Back to the potential, Manuel. Back to the potential. The underwater cultural heritage unit is relatively new to Heritage Malta. We know that Heritage Malta is 20 years old. And in recent years, this unit was led by Professor Timmy Gambin, who has the godfather
yes. So,
the admiral.
I like the image of the godfather.
I usually use the title of that captain of 20 leagues under the sea, 12,000 leagues under the sea. I can't remember the name. Anyway, this potential is being harnessed by Heritage Malta, and both of you are working within this unit, promoting it all across the globe, at fairs, in school. So from a basic tutorial to kids who are 10 years old, to very high-end luxury tourists coming into Malta, and we're promoting this opportunity of going underwater and seeing these unique wrecks. Because Heritage Malta, apart from the sites that we have on land, we have underwater sites. And you ladies have the key to the sites.
To the wrecks.
What do you do? What is this all about? So that the people can
So it would be good to go back to the starting point. Like you mentioned, Uchu, our unit, is a relatively young unit. If we're going to take it in the history of Heritage Malta over the last 20 years, we were set up in 2018, and this only came about because there was a change in legislation in Malta.
Yep.
Prior to 2018, 2019, there was no specific law that dealt with the management of underwater cultural heritage. It was protected in a general sense as part of Malta's cultural heritage, but there was nothing that had explicit provisions for the protection of underwater cultural heritage, or UCH. So when Heritage Malta, when the UCHU was set up, our basic principle was if somebody could come to Malta and buy a ticket to visit the War Museum, the Archaeology Museum, or the Palace, why shouldn't a diver be able to do the same thing with Malta's historic wrecks?
Mm.
And here the big difference is that it's easy to see what we have on land. You can walk around, you can Google it, you can see them with your own eyes. When it comes to underwater, we have a massive barrier, which is the sea. It is not that easy to see underwater.
Although we love the sea, it's a barrier.
It is a barrier. And one of the biggest phrases we always use in our work is making the invisible visible. So we want people to be aware of what there is around our seas.
Oh. Some of the projects that you've been involved in over these past few years?
So, keeping with this making the invisible visible, one of our biggest projects is public outreach and promoting Malta's underwater cultural heritage. Like Liam said, we go from everywhere, from primary schools, active aging centers, other organizations or NGOs, all the way to international fairs and conferences. And what we do is essentially share Malta's underwater cultural heritage through a number of innovative techniques that Julia is our... She's the master of this, basically. She runs our Dive Into History program.
Tell us a bit more about that, Julia.
As Maya said, our three main keywords for what we do is explore, record, and share. So first off, we need to know what our sites are, what cultural heritage lies on Malta seabed. That is the explore. So we have several projects that we carry out throughout the year, mainly in diveable seasons such as summer. That is the exploring. Then we have the research, being confident in the history of our islands based on actual evidence, such as archaeological evidence, historic documents, archives, etc. That is how we know the story of our wrecks.
Yeah, identifying the sites.
Identifying the sites. Mm. Then it's the share, okay? Whatever we do has the most value because we want to share it with other people. The Dive into History is one of our main outreach projects. It's where we go to people, basically. We go to schools, we go to dive centers,
to scouts, anyone that would have us.
Basically. Anyone. We deliver a short talk, basically what is the Uchu, what do we do, and why we do it. Then we actually take VR headsets to show people the sites in a virtual manner. Mm. So we take people on a virtual dive on our sites. Why? Because if people don't see with their eyes, if they don't experience, then it's not really there.
Yeah.
And with important. The VR is the next best thing. Not everyone's a diver, and not every diver dives deeper than 50 meters.
And that's an important point, because our sites, the historic wrecks, they're not within recreational diver limits, so that's usually up to 30 meters.
Mm-hmm.
Most of Malta's historic wreck sites are all between 50 meters and the ones that are accessible to divers down to 120 meters.
Wow.
So it's a very specialized form of technical diving. So there's a very small percentage of the diving population that can actually visit these sites physically. So one of our main aims is, how do we broaden that audience, basically? Mm-hmm. How do we bring the sites to all the people and not just a small fraction of the people?
Do you yourselves dive to those to such depths?
No.
It takes a ridiculous amount of training, decades of diving training.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, it takes a lot of experience and technical skill to even access the sites. Now add another layer, which is working on these sites.
Working at those depths, yeah.
Mm,
working underwater is another different beast entirely.
Yeah,
when you're taking equipment, it can be dangerous with the equipment. You're focusing on working rather than focusing on yourself and your equipment. So it's another layer of complexity.
Mm. Yeah. It's interesting to think about this question of accessibility. So through the VR sets, which I've done, when they're extreme fun, and I would recommend them to everyone, someone like me, who is not a diver at all, gets to experience this wonderful world. On the other hand, I suppose there are those that would argue, well, shouldn't some sites just be...
Left alone.
That, if that airplane crashed and it's at that depth, people may have died there. It's a sort of tomb at the same time. Should we be going there, or should it be left alone to, take its course, as it were? What do you think of these issues?
It's an important point, because a lot of these sites, and I would say the vast majority of our wrecks, are actually war graves. So people did go down with these wrecks, and we do consider those to be their last resting place. Having said that, we don't agree that people shouldn't be able to visit them. Somebody on land can go to a cemetery and pay their respects at a cemetery.
True.
So why shouldn't we be able to do that with the sites underwater? We do have very strict rules and regulations for the divers that are visiting the site. So things like no wreck penetration and no touching. And through all of our research, we make it very, very clear that these are war graves and that we should be giving them the same respect. The analogy we always use in class with the kids is, you wouldn't go and have a picnic on somebody's grave, so why would you enter one of these shipwrecks if they are war graves?
Yeah.
That's always the analogy that we use with them.
Do you up to now have a sense of the extent of what is down there? Can you give a number somehow to sites, wrecks? What do you count exactly when you're doing
That's a good
like
question as well, because you can either identify it as a shipwreck, but then you also have individual objects, for example, an amphora that's lying on the seabed, or a torpedo from the First World War, a Second World War, or a piece of an engine or a piece of a propeller. So we would consider all of that to be underwater cultural heritage. So those are all cultural artifacts. In terms of numbers, no, we don't know exactly what there is in all of Malta's territorial seabed. That's an ongoing project of the archaeology department over here, where they're using sonar surveys every year to identify and locate these sites. And the aim is to create a kind of cultural map of Malta's entire territorial seabed.
Well,
we're talking about a very
huge,
big area. It's about 3,800 kilometers squared. Joe, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, it's massive.
And I think covered completely till now is around 40-50% of that.
I'd say 50-something.
50-something.
The thing is, until we confirm whether something is historic, i.e. a historic wreck or not, at first we call it a target. So we don't even infer the sense that it's historic yet, because at survey level, we wouldn't know.
Unless sometimes it's easy. Sometimes when it's blatant, an aeroplane, you identify it immediately from the shape. Exactly.
So things take time. First, we conduct the blind surveys with the AUV, and from Uchu's side, we do support with that because it takes a certain skill set to interpret the targets. Once we interpret the targets, then we can discern whether the target is geographical, which sometimes happens, or historic. Once we identify the target as a historic site, we classify it according to its importance, and then we have valorization documents which help us determine the severity of its heritage significance.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if there's a lot of ecology on wrecks, what we have discovered is that especially on metal wrecks, World War One, World War Two, there is a lot of diverse biology. Mm. Corals, sponges, fish, and they're acting as catchment areas for a lot of biodiversity. And from those valorization documents, we can classify which sites we're going to work on first. This leads to another project, which is the potentially polluting wrecks, and etc. So this is the basis of our exploration, what I explained there earlier.
So I imagine you must have quite a diverse team of people together, because you need so many different skills and specializations for this, no?
So we're a relatively small team at Uchu. I mean, we're 5-6 people, I think up to 7 now. We recently added two new members, one of whom is a marine biologist, because as Julia was saying, this element of ecological importance is something that we're really starting to recognize as being super, super relevant to these historic wrecks.
Because it's one thing to find the wreck and study it, but you don't ideally want to destroy the natural
environment. And like Julia was saying, what we're seeing with the metal wrecks is that they're becoming these ecological islands. They're the marine biology is so diverse over there with protected species like black coral that you will find a very, very small amount of in the natural environment. But on the historic wrecks, they're there. Now, we're not marine biologists. It's not easy for us to look at a photo, for example, or a 3D model and start identifying the fish and the corals and the sponges.
Fish is a fish.
Yeah, a fish is a fish. A yellow sponge is a yellow sponge for us. So that's why we have a marine biologist with us now, Ella, and her task is basically to start identifying these significant species that we have on our wreck, because it adds, as Julia was saying, another level of significance to these wrecks.
Julie, I wanted to go back a bit to that idea of you and the boats.
Yeah.
So in a typical day, let's say, at work, how much time do you get to spend with old boats and taking care of them? Or is that more of a Julia sideshow?
So traditional boats do classify within our underwater cultural heritage law.
Mm-hmm.
The law states that anything, either fully or partially within the sea, for at least 50 years or more, that has cultural heritage importance to Malta, can be deemed as underwater cultural heritage, and boats do classify, technically. I am very, very lucky that I do work on traditional boats quite a lot throughout my day-to-day. I am involved in a couple of projects, namely the Dyset Al-Latini, which belongs to Heritage Malta.
Mm.
It was the subject of my master's thesis, so I have accumulated.
You have a long relationship with it.
I conduct research. Sometimes I do surveys on traditional boats. How do I identify between boat A and boat B? Which one is more important?
I was going to say, for me, a boat is a boat.
Yeah, there are many tiers by which you can judge the importance of a boat. And it's its own sub-discipline within maritime archaeology.
Sure.
It's called nautical archaeology. Heritage Malta sponsors a number of projects, one of them being the Marsa Shlok Heritage Restore to Oshrata Tal Bahar project. Mm-hmm. In which a traditional boat, the typology is the Firilla, is being restored to be returned to the sea, sails and everything. Yeah. And it's a dream project. The boat is more than 100 years old,
mm-hmm.
so it doesn't only qualify as a part of Malta's underwater cultural heritage, it is even more than 100 years old. So this boat has an amount of identity which is being preserved through the project.
Yeah. It's an object that speaks almost, doesn't it? You wish it could speak.
No, sure. I love listening to Julia talk about traditional boats because it's not something you learn at school over here, or at least it's not something that was taught when I was studying history in secondary school or anything. So even just listening to her present about the subjects, you know, I recently learned the difference between an opera talbahar and a daisa talbahar. I had no idea.
All right.
Fascinating.
It can be a bit intimidating as research because there's a lot. Some of it is subjective and some of it is unique to Malta. So when you think about it, an nautical archaeologist that studied abroad would be more than competent in studying Maltese traditional boats. However, you need to truly understand Maltese identity. The Maltese identity.
Limited with terminology and boat building.
And also, I mean, boats reflect the identity of the space, the culture of the people, the individuals that operated, the people who built it, the people who worked on it. It has its own stratigraphy within its construction,
uh-huh.
decoration, religion. It's imbued everything. With.
Yeah.
If I may, how much of a challenge is it for you as women in an area which somehow to me seems very masculine by definition?
Well, you're not wrong, especially uh-huh. when it comes to the diving community and then the technical deep diving community.
Yes,
they
and
do
boat building.
And boat building, they do tend to be male-dominated areas. From my end, I can't really say that I've hit any roadblocks or, you know, ever felt uncomfortable in a situation or something like that. I think with Julie, it's a bit different when it comes to traditional boat building.
No, from my end, it's no obstacles whatsoever. I feel very much welcome. Sometimes I would have site visits where people assume that I am not knowledgeable and they would start explaining different parts of the boat.
But then
I can, you know, clutch Gus and I would
I suppose it might even see you as a novelty almost, that, you know.
Sometimes, yes, it can be quite an asset where I would be at first unassuming, underestimated, and then, you know, I'd find
and then you
it
take
really
out your
then
big
you come
guns.
Back. Yeah,
something that is really prominent in the trades especially, it's pride. And sometimes people get very possessive over
ego.
Knowledge.
Yeah, ego.
Especially when it's a researcher asking about detailed information.
Yes.
So being, you know, I'm a small female. Honestly, I've had no problems whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
I think I'm pretty lucky.
That's good to hear. Another project that you're involved in is the Malta Ship Graffiti Project. Can you tell us
it's
a little bit about
it? Julia's baby, the graffiti project. Yeah.
So the Malta Ship Graffiti Project, first and foremost, is Timmy's brainchild. It is Timmy's creation. And it relates to historic etchings and the depiction of ships, mainly, or maritime iconography. We have quite a big volume of data. In the Maltese Islands, I believe we've recorded more than 120 locations harboring historic ship graffiti.
And that wouldn't be one location equals one graffito. It would be one location equals many, many, many graffitos,
The oldest evidence is from the Tarshan temples, so that is prehistoric.
Of course, yes.
And the most recent would be 50 years plus, although we do find even modern ship graffiti. It is a widespread phenomenon, not just reserved to Malta, they are also found abroad.
Mm-hmm.
However, in Mediterranean islands such as Sicily, Malta, Cyprus, it is absolutely...
They're everywhere.
It's a big recorded phenomenon. And our job at the Malta Ship Graffiti Project, we have a website... MaltaShipGraffiti.org.
Which is lovely. I would recommend it to our listeners to go into it.
Yeah, MaltaShipGraffiti.org. We have our galleries where we upload photographs of these ship graffiti together with a map. So
where
people,
located, yeah.
even if they can't visit the locations, maybe people live abroad, they can still enjoy and research this very fascinating subject. We also have heritage walks. Mm-hmm. This website is it's continually evolving, so we're uploading galleries every single month. Next month we're uploading a new heritage walk, so keep an eye out for that.
Good.
We do have an outreach program associated with the Malta Ship Graffiti Project.
Uh-huh.
where basically we use the methods of experimental archaeology and people can practice etching their own historic ship graffito on a tablet that we provide.
On a limestone tablet.
On a limestone tablet.
Yeah. Oh, sounds fun.
Talks, etc. It's
there's also the element of citizen science in the website. So if somebody is walking around Valletta or their hometown or something and they happen to spot a graffito on the website, they can take a picture, upload it, write down where they found it, etc. Mm. So that's that element of people also getting involved with this aspect of their heritage.
Wonderful. Okay, we have about a minute and a bit to conclude. I'd like to ask you, where do you see this field going? You know, you're young, you have many years of work and initiative here. What would you like to do and see for this particular sector?
I think when it comes to underwater cultural heritage management, specifically in Malta, we're right now we're on an upwards trajectory. Like the work and the projects are building up. There's more and more work coming in. A lot of important projects like the potentially polluting wrecks one that Julia mentioned, which is a passion project of mine. And where I'd like to see this moving ahead, one is awareness from the general public about the type of heritage that we have in our waters, because that's only awareness breeds protection, ultimately.
True.
And to basically continue, you know, bringing this cultural heritage to the wider public.
Julia?
Even with our small team, we have so many projects and it's continually growing. So if we have, 16 projects under our remit, each project is expanding and is creating even more projects.
Mm-hmm.
It's by far a growing discipline.
Yeah.
And as Maya said, now we're focusing on management, for example, on policies. And we're latching on to nuanced and very new.
We're doing
new
work that isn't being done anywhere else in the
Mediterranean,
it's the introduction of this type of management system. It hasn't really been done anywhere else. So we're at an advantage in Malta because we're a small country.
Yeah,
with relatively accessible underwater cultural heritage. It's not that easy, when you have a coastline that's thousands of kilometers long, which luckily we don't have over here. But yeah, we're there. We're at the forefront.
We're also very present in conferences overseas. So there is dialogue with other units like ours.
Not only conferences, even fairs,
fairs.
A lot of different things. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, it's been an absolute delight to have you with us today. Jiena Manuel Buttigieg, f'isem Liam Gawċi, nirringrazzja lil Maja, nirringrazzja lil Julia, nirringrazzja lil team kollu ta' Campus 103.7 u nistidher lis-semmija jkunu magħna l-ġimgħa d-dieħla ħankomplu nitkellmu fuq iktar temi. Grazie.